DJ, drop a beat.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
Not another podcast.
What the hell is wrong with you people?
Not another podcast.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
James.
I am sick and tired of everyone telling me I'm confused.
Bryce.
We're reckless, arrogant, stupid dicks.
Big Jim.
Wubba-lubba-dub-dub. That's my catchphrase, remember?
Samantha.
I have one job on this lousy ship. It's stupid, but I'm gonna do it, okay?
Dan.
I don't know who you are, but I have a very particular lack of skills. I will never be able to find you.
Not another podcast.
And welcome to Not Another Podcast. I am James. Fuck you, Samantha.
I'm Sam.
I'm Dan.
God damn it, Dan.
We had this rehearsed.
I even said before we started, Samantha's going to be a jerk and do a long pause.
I was half tempted just to chime in just to see if I could go over, but then I was like, no, I'm just going to let that go.
So, three of us are back. We're going to wish Jim well. He's dealing with some family stuff, and Bryce is just lazy.
Yeah, fuck him.
So, so there's that. So I want to talk first about something that happened to Danny and I about a week ago. We met some fans.
Yeah, it was weird.
Really weird.
Oh, really?
And I didn't get to tell you. I met another one later on.
Nuh-uh.
Completely different.
Oh, Jesus.
So, apparently this show has fans, so we're going to have to step up.
Yeah, fuck.
I know.
God damn it.
Shouldn't have gone to that fucking con.
Nope. Rose City
really
Comic Con.
We have been doing so well for so long.
Right.
And now, not so much.
Being well aware of our lack of listeners, you know, kept us, you know, nice and comfortable. Now the fucking pressure's on.
Now we have three.
Oh, Jesus.
Fucking three.
Well, I'm out.
Three whole listeners?
Yeah.
Right?
And three listeners that are not related to any of us in any way, shape, or form.
But you're not counting our only listener prior to that.
That's amazing.
So wow. That's four.
We have four listeners. One who's obligated to listen to this show.
You're cutting it out so bad.
Likewise.
And that's the name of the episode.
You're cutting in and out so bad. So bad.
Maybe if you turn up the pods, Samantha.
So means you're just really bad at it.
Well.
Yeah.
We know that.
What? What's going on?
Do what now?
I am here.
Yay!
So saith Menstrata.
Say what?
This is going to be the episode where Samantha just comments all over the place. And...
Didn't hear any of that.
I think we have a delay.
Did not hear any of that.
I think we do.
I think there's a delay.
Sam, are we working on a delay system here?
It's not just a delay. You guys are cutting out.
Hmm.
That's weird, because I think it's a Skype thing, because you're coming through crystal clear.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, you guys are not on my end.
I love the episodes where we troubleshoot
right,
in the middle
right.
of the show.
For those of you who wish to do podcastery over Skype, this show is for you for troubleshooting. And
yeah,
long,
I could
awkward pauses.
Really quick.
Go ahead, Danny, and I can carry
See if
on.
That helps.
Yeah,
it helps
yeah, we'll
last
be
all
time. Right. We'll be all right.
We'll carry on. So, Danny and I went to Rose City Comic Con here in Portland.
Right, I will reboot.
Go okay. ahead.
We're just going to carry on. Danny and I went to Rose City Comic Con about a week ago, and I was wondering because we caught up like middle of the con.
Yeah, it was about 1 o'clock or so. Maybe
yeah, somewhere around
so.
There. So my wife and I are wandering, and I saw this booth that had puppets, and I got really excited because one of the things I love is puppets. Yeah. I love the Muppets and things like that. So
naturally,
went over and check it out, and it's this company called Everything Z.
All Things Z.
All Things Z. Thank you. And they're based out of Eugene, Oregon, and they have a YouTube channel which you really need to check out. It's basically tips for surviving the zombie apocalypse
through puppetry. It is pretty awesome.
And I was talking with the guy, and asking about their thing, and then it came up that I do this podcast, and the guy got really excited. And it threw me off my game. And he was like, I love that podcast. Now, anyone who's ever searched this podcast out knows that there are at least two other Not Another podcasts out there.
Right.
There's one that ends with a question mark, I think is based out of L.A. And there's another one that's like, I forget how they do it. But there's at least two others out there.
Right. So there was a strong possibility that he was thinking of the wrong one.
Show, yeah. So I kind of quizzed him a little. And he was referring to this one.
Again, it was really weird for me when you told me that, because it was like, I'm waiting in line, you know, doing my thing, and you came up, and it's like, dude, we have a fan.
A fan.
And I was like, nuh-uh.
So eventually we found them, because they went off to do some taping. We couldn't find their booth. We found them later, and he got really excited again, because now I showed back up with Danny. After I had left, one of his co-workers, friends, whatever, she subscribed to the podcast.
Nice.
And she told us, and we both just went, I'm so sorry.
We apologize in advance for the content of which you're about to receive.
Yeah, it was really weird. But they were cool guys, and they actually interviewed us. You can check them out on YouTube. You can see Danny and I being interviewed by Dalton.
Yeah, Dante.
Dante. Dalton.
God, you suck at this.
I really do. They're not going to want to be fans anymore.
Right, they're going to listen to the show. It's like, really? Really?
I am going to try, if we can get this Skype thing worked out, try and get them on the show at some point in the future.
Hell yeah.
Because they're really cool guys, and their YouTube channel is totally cool, so you got to check it out. All Things Z with Dante Dalton.
Dante Dalton?
I do remember Snark, though.
Yes, Snark, Dante, and I can't remember the others.
Yeah, I don't think we were introduced.
My apologies, y'all. I have actually watched a couple of the videos for them, and they are pretty funny.
They're pretty funny and pretty poignant. We were discussing with them like the poignancy of what we do and what they do and how you can get really good messages out there through comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're bros now. They're right there.
Homies. Well, and again, it was kind of surreal that somebody knew me that I didn't know. And I'm not used to that.
Well, it happened again later. So your wife recommended a book to my wife.
Oh, Rejected Princess?
Which we got.
It's a great book.
It's really good. So we went by. We were getting ready to leave the show. We went by because I wanted to see the book, and we ended up buying it and talking to the artist. Totally cool guy. As we were talking to him, the guys in the booth next to me noticed that I was wearing my press credentials, and they asked what I did. And I told him I work for a radio station, and I do Not Another podcast. Same freaking reaction. And it was like, whoa, whoa, stop, just stop. I can't do this anymore. Hey, look, there's Sam.
Let's see if we get Sam back in on the conversation. Sam, did you make it back?
Yo.
What's crack-a-lackin'?
Oh my gosh, now I can't hear anything. Hello?
Oh, crap.
And again, she's coming through fine. I tell her to check her settings, but she can't hear me.
Oh, and she ended the call on us. Or we got kicked out of Skype. One way or the other, we lost Sam.
Take that, Skype!
Yeah, one-star rating. You guys suck. But yeah.
Well, it doesn't help me at all.
Not really. But yeah, and it's weird too because the author of Rejected Princesses, you know, we're really happy to see him because for like the last year or so, we bought that book because my wife had seen some of the stuff online. And so what I did, because I enjoy reading and I enjoy reading aloud, is I would read her a story from that book every night. And we told the author that, and he was like, oh, that's so sweet.
Give her a cookie? And
no cookies, but I did tuck her in.
Okay.
Well, no, it was just kind of fun because both my wife and I, we very much like hearing about history. And the coolest part about that book is it's a lot of really unsung female, you know, history people that should have much more notoriety, but just don't. And the fact that it's dressed up like they were rejected, you know, Disney princesses is just hilarious. And, yeah, we talked with that guy for a while, and we have his new book out, Tough Mothers. And, yeah, no, he was a really cool guy and really enjoy all the stories and whatnot like that. So if you hadn't read it, highly recommend it to our four fans.
There comes Samantha again.
Come on, Sam. Come on down. You're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
Can you hear us now?
I'm going to take that as a no.
No, pretty much no.
No, no. It's just not seeming to go.
Let's try calling her.
Mm.
Yeah, it was an interesting book. The guy was cool. But yeah, that like, I think I turned on like another couple of people talking to the one guy. So we may be up to upwards of like seven listeners.
Hello?
That'd be awesome.
Can you hear us now?
Are you there?
I think she's... Oh. What?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness.
Oh. Hi.
Hi.
Now you're coming in nice and clear.
Oh, good.
It's a good thing that didn't take forever and interrupt the show in any way, shape, or form.
Multiple times. Yeah. I mean, it's a damn good thing. Damn good.
Just going to call this episode Call Waiting.
That's what I do.
That's okay.
So, but, and we talked about this a couple weeks before, but talking with the guys at All Things Z really put me in mind to discuss zombie survival methods. We were talking about putting ourselves in real situations. The only kind of fantastical thing is that the dead are rising.
Right.
So you, at your skill level, what you know, how do you survive?
That's fair. I think one of the big questions I would have just to kind of troubleshoot this whole scenario, are we talking Night of the Living Dead zombies? Are we talking 28 days later infected? Are we talking infection rates like Resident Evil? Or are we talking just straight up, like I said, Night of the Living Dead, where the corpses are just getting up and moseying around nice and slow and shit?
I think we have to, like... realistically, if we're going to base this as much in reality as we can, I think we have to do kind of a combination of all of those things.
Well, again, I just want to know what kind of enemy I'm up against, because if I'm getting swarmed by a bunch of rage-crazed monsters, survival is going to be how fast you can run. Not so much, you know, creating strongholds or anything like that. The likelihood is you're fucked. But in the zombie apocalypse, like even Resident Evil and Night of the Living Dead, where you kind of have meandering monsters who are just, you know, they can swarm up on you, but if you keep ahead of them, you're okay. Mm. You know, it's kind of one of those things where it paints two entirely different scenarios. Because if you try to cut one of the rage zombies' heads off, if you accidentally get blood in your mouth, you're fucked. You're done. That's game over. But if you chop a head off of a Night of the Living Dead zombie, the likelihood is he dumps to the ground, and that's the end of it.
So we're going to have to set the ground rules then.
That's like what I'm looking for.
So in this day and age, if we're going to do a very realistic scenario, we have to go under the assumption that we as a society are aware of it because of the 24-hour news cycle. It's definitely got to be a virus.
Okay.
It can't be like corpses being reanimated because of radiation because you know, we've got radiation all over the place. And that just hasn't happened yet. So Samantha's just being their idol, so I hope she's hearing all this.
Me too. Sam, are you picking up what we're putting down?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay cool.
I'm listening.
So I'm going to say that we're going to use like the modern equivalent of zombies in that it's some sort of virus. That is reactivating the brain.
Okay.
But the body is essentially dead, so therefore it decays. So, since the body can reanimate, if it's freshly dead, it can move as fast as it would have in life.
Okay.
But as the body decays...
They will slow down.
They will slow down.
what's the communication or the contagion rate? Is it, you know, get a little bit of blood in your eye or your mouth or something like that?
I think it's any sort of body transfer or fluid transfer. So if they bite you, you get infected. If you somehow get whatever their fluid, because you can't really call it blood anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
And as it coagulates, it's going to be less.
It's coagulated, I mean.
Yeah.
True, but at that rate, you're also
drippy.
Under the pretense that this virus is keeping the blood moving enough to where the body won't go into complete rigor mortis within, you know, a couple hours after reanimation. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you have to be under that pretense as well. So, I mean, the blood will be flowing, albeit it might be overrun by the virus, but it'd still be running. Because otherwise, like I said, a couple hours after infection, you just go and stiff board to the ground you go. So, I mean, there has to be some circulation in order to keep the body upright long enough to decay. And then at that, you're also looking into, okay, well, what muscles decay first? What muscles are falling apart?
Well, okay.
You know, I'm just troubleshooting from the
scientific point of view. No, I like it because it gives us a good basis to where we're going. I think definitely a bite will transfer the virus. But I think if you get blood on your skin, you're fine. But if you get it in your mouth or your eye.
Okay.
And it's got to be different rates, too, because there's different.
Or on an open wound?
Open wound, that'd be good.
Yeah.
There's different metabolisms. Like, if it gets straight into your blood, it's going to metabolize quickly because, like Danny said, it's working the blood, so therefore it feels like the blood is its most comfortable breeding ground, essentially.
Okay. So we are talking more like 28 Days Later style zombies then, in the respect that was the infection ability, and it would eventually take you from, you know, normal synaptic patterns to batshit crazy. Mm-hmm. So basically a modified rabies.
Kind of, yeah.
Like a fast-working rabies. Okay. Because, again, it's one of those things where that kind of changes my battle plans in general. Because,
but it also, we have to figure, like, what is the incubation period?
True. How fast-acting is the virus to a healthy individual?
If you are infected, it could be different. Like I said, if it gets into an open wound, if it gets straight into your blood, the incubation period is going to be shorter because it's already in your bloodstream. Whereas if it gets in, like, your mouth, then it's got to go through your digestive tract before it becomes part of your bloodstream.
Right.
Same with your eye. It's got to work its way in.
Right.
So there's a different metabolism rate.
Okay.
And I think if it gets in your mouth, you're going to have a longer incubation period before you succumb to the virus. But let's also say that once you are infected, that's it. You're done. You are dead.
Mm-hmm. Again, I think in that pretense, the
and
most...
in honor of Samantha, if you're pregnant, you're going to have zombie baby!
Yeah, zombie baby! I recently rewatched that movie.
Dawn of the Dead?
I still hate zombie baby, but...
The movie...
Yeah, I recently rewatched the remake.
Yeah.
The movie's solid except for Zombie Baby.
You totally just cut out.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I really enjoyed
Zombie Baby.
Movie.
And I hadn't seen that movie since it first came out. So I was like still under the pretense that I did not like the movie. But yeah, the movie is decent. Zombie Baby is just stupid.
Agreed.
But yeah, the rest of the movie's pretty solid.
I actually really, really enjoy that movie for what it is. Because, again, it's the Night of the Living Dead concept, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the remake they had in, what was it, 92?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that movie, when I was younger, scared the shit out of me. It was awesome. I loved it. As I got older, I realized this doesn't seem that bad, really. I know it sounds terrible, but it's like, you know, when you got these meandering monsters who are literally walking at about a half a mile an hour, and that's about their top speed. Nothing personal, but you could have a lot of fun just murderizing the shit out of these monsters. and you could probably cure all this apocalypse by just realizing that running scared and tucking yourself into a corner is a really bad idea. Being out in open ground and just starting to lop these fools is really going to do really well for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That movie, upon recent review, it was like, pretty sure you guys overshot the survival aspect of this movie. It really shouldn't have been that difficult. I get it, you're scared, and I get it. You hadn't, you know, known anything like this to ever come about. But at the same time, most of the damage and wounds inflicted were because they weren't paying attention.
Oh, yeah.
Barbara, you know, keyhauling the fucking car off the backside of the hill. Dude, it was one. And he was really slow.
Yeah.
And then you cornered yourself in a house, and then there was 10.
But see, that's...
And then there were 15.
That's exactly what we're getting at here. I mean, it's like, we're coming at this whole thing from like, this is what I would do, this is what I would do. But until you're in that situation where your emotions are running high and you're completely on fight or flight...
You don't actually know.
Yeah, I mean, you can say what you do but when you're... in that situation.
Oh, I understand.
Everything that you said you would do will go right out the window, and we have to come at this from that angle.
The sucky part about it is, you know, I mean, the whole prepping aspect of this notion, for me, just like you said, it's really a at the moment response. I mean, you have to really rely on what you know as far as your survival techniques before something like this goes off. I mean, an equatable difference, I guess, would be, you know, how Barbara felt in Night of the Living Dead would be the equivalent to being right in the middle of a mass shooting. What do you do?
Yeah.
Do you hero up? Do you nut up and go after the shooter? Or do you duck and hide and try to get away? Mm-hmm. And to be fair, most people duck and hide, and that's okay, because that's our natural response. We know we're up against something that isn't just another body. It's not just another human. It's a weapon of some sort. And when you're talking about zombies, they are essentially nature's biological weapon against us. And it's considerably stronger and, you know, more efficient at destruction than we are. So I get that. At the same time, if we were hearing news reports that a zombie outbreak was, or, you know, undead were reanimating all around our city, I know at first the shock would take us, but about 5 minutes later it's like, okay, I thought about this because I've watched zombie movies. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the advantage of having seen the fantastical side of this to where we can go, okay, I see where some people fucked up and where some people succeeded. In a scenario like 28 Days Later, for instance, since that's kind of what we're dealing with, it really does come down to how fast you can run and get away from any populated area as fast as humanly possible. Because at this rate, it's coming for you. Even if you try to defend yourself, the likelihood of getting blood on you in close quarter combat, really high.
Yeah.
So avoiding contact at all cost is paramount. Even if you are a crack shot with a gun, even in close quarters, you're going to have spatter. Mm. If you're more proficient with a blade of any kind, you have to be really fucking close. And that makes even more dangerous situation, because at that rate, you're still dealing with spatter, but now it's even closer. So, again, I think in those scenarios, it really comes down to how fast you can run and how long. Because, honestly, if that were the situation for me, that would be my first thought. Haul ass as fast as possible in any direction I knew civilization stopped. You know, for us out here, I would probably head south towards Clackamas area. There's a decent amount of wooded area out there with lighter populations. So my thought process is the ground zero being Portland, you know, city central for the most part, would be the worst place in the universe to be. So if you can avoid it, do. Get yourself as far away from civilization as possible and then start figuring it out. Because honestly, that's going to be golden rule number one. Getting away from heavily populated areas that have already seen a massive outbreak. And I guess...
So with that in mind, Samantha, I guess my plan is to go back to Godforsaken?
Ooh, yeah, Montana. Good place to go.
the world's ending anyway.
Right.
I mean, maybe not godforsaken directly.
Not at that point.
No, it's actually, you know, that's actually not a
I mean, what a place
idea.
To be.
Montana, Wyoming, where there's, like, wide tracts of land that are flat, so you can see stuff coming mm-hmm. from all directions.
Open land.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wide open spaces.
Yeah.
The problem is supplies. When you get there, supplies is a real problem.
Well, and again, it all comes down to how lucky you are whether or not the local wildlife is also susceptible to this as well. Like, you know, how cats can't catch a cold from humans. Mm-hmm. Well, do we know that game out in the woods can't catch it either? Fish, you know, birds, everything that would be, you know, meat edible, we can't really know if they're susceptible. Hell, at that rate, we can't even know if the plants are infectable. I mean, it becomes a really touchy situation. I think at that rate, you're better off foraging for any kind of root and then boiling the ever-living fuck out of it. So if you can find somebody who is growing potatoes, you'd be okay. Maybe. But at that rate, you're really running a high risk of any possible infection through any food you might be able to forage, any food you might be able to find, could potentially have the infection on it. I mean, just like the flu virus can stay on the outside of a plastic bag for up to, I think, 9 hours before it officially dies. So you figure any food that you might have collected in the city might have had a sneeze from one of these fuckers before they turned, which in turn might cause you problems. Again, the variables are way, way high. So at that rate, I would, like I said, your best case, in my opinion, survival, is first secure yourself the hell away from other people and as far away from civilization as possible, and then figure it out the old school way. I mean, you figure our ancestors had to be able to figure it out at some point. We probably could too. So that would be my thoughts on my plan in that case scenario. If there are zombies like Night of the Living Dead, I'm going to have a fucking ball.
Well, they're not.
Damn it. Well, fuck me.
I think most realistically, we have to look at it from a modern medical standpoint in that, like I said, if it's going to be virus-based and it's going to reanimate a dead corpse, it's... The fact of the matter is that it's dead. And once it's dead, it's going to start decaying.
Right.
So, yes, it can move fast to begin with,
mm-hmm.
but they will slow down and eventually just stop because they will rot so bad.
And rigor mortis will eventually set in regardless of how strong this virus is to keep blood pumping.
Yeah.
So their limbs would get tight eventually.
So... I don't know the rate of decay on a human body.
As far as I understand, within about 4 weeks of a corpse, you'll see
heavy
decay.
There's a lot of factors into that.
Yes. Exposure, placement, things like that will always play massive things.
But the hotter the climate, the faster that's going to be.
Exactly. So southern states would probably see a higher decay rate. More north you go, where... stays cold longer, you'd see a much slower decay rate.
But also, the more northern you go, the more chance there is.
So then the question becomes, do you go where there's a higher decay rate, where they move faster, or do you go north where they freeze, but slower decay?
Well, again, it all depends. I mean, us being in Oregon, I would say
that
I would say the best place for us to go would be south. Because we would see a higher decay rate, as well as we got a lot of heavy deserts in the south.
But at the same time, a lot of people are going to have the same thing.
Oh, true.
And you run the risk of running into more populated areas.
Too true.
Which then
puts
you right in the middle. I would actually say go north, because as they get colder, they would move slower. So you could potentially, so long as you don't get swarmed...
Well, and again, we're also under the pretense that they are susceptible to freezing. All they have to do is get a warm day, they thaw back out, and they go right back into doing what they're doing. So now you have...
Provided you haven't gone through and dealt with the problem.
Potentially, yes. I mean, every landscape is going to provide its own levels of difficulties and variables that, unfortunately, until we actually see the situation play out, we couldn't possibly know. But at the same time, under theory, again, if it were me, I would either go east or southeast in the respects that there's a lot of open territory in that direction. It does start flattening out, as well as you also got the Rocky Mountains, which is going to be one hell of a place for anyone to cover if they're, you know, reanimated. So if you go towards the Rocky Mountains, you're going to get that cold, but at the same time, you're also going to get a lot of heavily forested, non-inhabited areas. And at that, if you continue to go southeast, you're still going to be going towards, like, the plains and whatnot, and it's going to get warmer. And by the time you reach, I mean, let's play it fair, and we'll say that we're walking this entire distance. By the time you reach something like South Dakota or something like that, it's been months. So if the outbreak does break down the body in a fast enough way, the likelihood is at this point you're either dealing with, you know, the quarantined people finally starting to venture back out, that, you know, didn't see infection, the people who had kind of based up, you're going to see the initial infected already falling to decay and, you know, just general disarray for what they get. So I would say by the time you hit one of the more Midwestern states, I would imagine the majority of the apocalypse would have already run its course. And at this rate, you'd be left picking up the pieces and dealing with stragglers.
So, in reality, or as close as we can get to reality with this.
This is not a reality TV show.
It's
not even a TV show.
Assuming that the infection spreads really quickly, mm-hmm. like we're talking hours
okay.
from the point of contact until you are medically dead.
Gotcha.
And then let's be nice and say 20 minutes.
Think the outbreak scene in World War Z. That was fast.
Yeah, sure. I'm essentially trying to figure out, like, from the moment that you are medically dead to the point of reanimation is 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay.
But the infection, from the point of infection until the point of death, we're talking, let's say, 8 to 12 hours.
Okay.
So it's a very fast-moving virus. Now, let's also say that a healthy, young human being who is infected...
None of us.
No, obviously. from the point of reanimation, they have the same agility, strength, all of that. So they could realistically... And on top of it, they're like a rabid dog. They're very, very violent.
Okay. But not very coordinated.
No, but gotcha. They can't, let's say, so patient zero
uh-huh.
in a very densely populated area like New York,
okay.
New York City, I would say the rate of spread would be very quickly. So by the time we hear about it,
true, but we're also under the pretense that nobody else will have called a state of emergency by that time. And, you know, it's one thing to be worried about, you know, people flying in planes and going, you know, to other places. But if it is that fast acting to where it's only roughly about a day between infection and, you know, death to reanimation, I would say... it probably wouldn't make it out of the East Coast.
See, that's what I'm thinking.
If Patient Zero was in New York City, one of the highly, you know, densely populated areas that we're aware of in the States, I would say it would not breach the East Coast. I have a lingering suspicion if it did, it would be small areas, and having known what's going on already, they would have sent the word out. It's like, hey, any plane traffic that comes down, you need to quarantine your people for at least 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
At least. Now, granted, official quarantine is 40 days, because, you know, that's the French word that came about during the Black Plague. But if you held on to them for 2 days and basically said, okay, all my passengers are good, move on, at that rate, you would quail the infection to small groups that would land outside of the East Coast or anywhere else around the world for that matter. So, yeah, I would say at that high communicable rate, it probably would not breach the East Coast. We'd still suffer massive losses.
But it wouldn't be a worldwide epidemic.
No. No, I don't think... I honestly don't believe that it would make it...
For our scenario, we need to figure out a way to make it a worldwide epidemic.
You need a longer incubation period. You need days of incubating before it turns you. Reanimating your corpse is definitely a faster moving. So if you die by any means, like let's say you get stabbed or shot, this virus will instantly wake your ass back up. But a normal healthy person who gets this disease, I would say give them 20 days.
20 days?
20 days of incubation where this virus gets into your system through the smallest thing, infects your body, and after the 20th day, you die and you get reanimated. Because at that rate, it would be a hell of a lot harder to catch patient zero, and by then, the virus would have spread everywhere. Especially if patient zero was somewhere in like New York City, where it's a heavy port for a lot of different air traffic to different parts of the world.
See, I'm coming at this from the World War Z, like not the movie, but the book, looking at it from that aspect and how it spread.
Mm-hmm. You have to have longer incubation periods without any noticeable things. You might suffer something like cold symptoms, which everybody is already used to. So it's like if a cold spreads, it's like, oh, well, we have an epidemic of the flu going on. But, you know, 20, 30 days later, it's a month later, and it's like, okay, these people are not getting any better. But now a fuck ton of people are suffering flu symptoms that are all very similar. Now we got a bigger problem. It wouldn't become an epidemic of, you know, apocalyptic proportions until all those original people started dying and turning and dying and turning.
Here's an interesting question that I've never seen addressed, and I think we should.
Why not?
If we're going to have this epidemic, where does it start? Who is patient zero? What is it? I mean, we've established it's a virus.
Right. Sam, your thoughts?
Okay, then.
She fell asleep on us, all right.
You guys are
sorry,
so
with the delay... And you guys are, there's such a long delay right now, and you guys are cutting in and out a little bit, but I'm just kind of sitting back listening.
Samantha just became listener number 8.
As far as spread goes, yeah, I think a longer incubation period is what's going to be more realistic. Like at the beginning of Zombieland, when you have the girl who was just, she just looked like she had the flu, and really wasn't feeling well, or even if we take it to the spread of the disease in war in Planet of the Apes, the new Planet of the Apes movies, look at it like that. You know, the guy just looks like he has the flu, and then they show you the rate during the end credits and stuff like that. So it would have to be a bit of a longer incubation period. You're fine for a couple days, and then you know you get your cold, and then you start getting your flu. But by then you've already passed it to multiple people because as we all know, so many people do not wash their hands or wash them with soap. So,
and how often people rub their eyes or, you know,
sneezing.
Yeah. I mean, it's the communication rates are really high.
Coughing, you'll spread saliva.
So, I mean, at that rate, that would probably be the best case for worldwide epidemic.
Yep.
So, what we're saying essentially then is the initial virus is spread
slow. Where is more susceptible? Where is more susceptible? Office buildings?
I would say train stations, honestly.
So we have to look at where is more susceptible. Like office buildings, airports, bus terminals.
Schools.
Things where people are touching a lot of surfaces.
Yeah, schools.
Yeah, kids are gross.
Totally.
Yeah, they are.
Patient zero is probably a toddler.
Fucking jerk. Hate toddlers.
So, going on that this is a virus, I gotta say that it's probably most likely some sort of strain of rabies and the flu, like, mixed. Mm-hmm. I would almost argue that it's a biological weapon that went bad.
Well, went good, depending on how you want to phrase it.
Well, no, I'd say went bad because it's job. Like, their idea is, like, wipe them out, not to reanimate them.
True. But at the same time...
And maybe
time,
in the labs, they only went so far as to... Okay, I think I just came up with the origin. Here we go.
James has got a moment. Ding!
So, let's, for the sake of argument, say that one of our enemies is developing a biological weapon, and they're testing it on rats.
Mm-hmm.
When the rats die, they think they've got a great weapon, and they just get rid of the rats before they realize that the rats are reanimating.
Yeah. But then you have to have a longer period of reanimation, because most people who do any research on any kind of rodent or thing like that,
mm-hmm,
will, after the animal has, you know, died, they will autopsy and inspect and research as to what exactly failed on the animal, you know, what caused the animal's death. So the likelihood is, I mean, you'd have to go with the pretense that this is an underground cell of people who just don't know their armpits from their assholes.
Thank you, because I think you just added to it. During the initial autopsy, the rat could reanimate and bite the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And so he could be carrying it without realizing.
Again, most research facilities would put a massive kibosh on him as soon as they did that. I mean, just out of sheer principle.
If he said anything.
Well, and that's just it. It's a matter of most research facilities that would be doing something like this would have such high security measures in place to where if you have any form of contact with anything that even remotely had contact with what you're working on, your ass is off to a side, and they're going to make sure you don't have it. Otherwise, you don't go home.
That's assuming that it's done in, like, the U.S. or one of those countries. If you're talking about, like, Iran or Iraq or even North Korea...
They still have their standards. It's just a fundamental notion of if you're dealing with something like this and you are that careless, you deserve to have your entire country destroyed by your creation. But at the same time, it's one of those things where even the most bottom barrel researcher like me, for instance, if I was to do any kind of research on this, you better believe that I would have every form of Kevlar gear on my body at all times when even getting close to something that had this bug in it. Just out of sheer principle, I would not want any kind of anything close to me.
But it does lend to the scenario.
It does, but again, we're suspending disbelief for this whole premise, so I'll let that slide. But at the same time, again...
I understand that if we're trying to keep it as real as possible,
yeah,
then it doesn't work, but there's stuff in there that could.
You're better off finding somebody who is a crackpot who devised this shit in his home lab, who has a thought of world genocide on his mind and has completely lost his mind, but
and
at some point was...
to be a
microbiologist, you'd be surprised. But at the same time, if you had someone who was working this shit on their own time and was testing on multitudes of animals, got the virus right but didn't realize it, and then one of them bit him, he freaked out, he let the cages go. Now we have dozens upon dozens of animals running rampant that have it that don't show signs yet, but they're interacting with people, and that would be the cause of your spread in a much more highly likely.
We could also use the scenario that, since Samantha pointed it out, the Planet of the Apes scenario, where the guy is just in the wrong place at the wrong time, gets some blood on him, and no one thinks of it. He just goes and cleans himself up, but by then the virus has already taken hold.
True.
Which, arguably, is a more realistic
scenario for global epidemic, for sure. But again, I would argue a lot of the safe nets that are up, again, depending on the incubation time, depending on the virus's speed at which it is contagious versus, you know, the actual reanimation. I mean, all those variables will paint you a better scenario. If you have a 6-month incubation period, the world is fucked, because nobody will know it's coming until it's way too late. And at that point, there is no one getting out alive that isn't already living in a rural buttfuck nowhere.
Well, even in a 20-day scenario, a 20-day incubation period, you still got people flying all over the world. Oh, so, yeah. I mean, a 20-day incubation period...
It's going to put some hurt on real fast.
Because we have to assume that when it really starts, those who are infected... and reanimate and attack, and especially the first few when, you know, no one knows what it is, so doctors are just thinking.
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay.
Fire.
Anytime.
Sorry. There's like a 4-second delay. So, are we talking incubation period as in... the virus is what turns you, or is it like with The Walking Dead when everyone is infected and it's not until you're dead that you turn, or you turn faster after you've been like directly bit? Does that make sense? Because there's two different ways to look at it. If you get sick, you turn and you're fucked. Or is this you're sick but you're not going to feel anything until you're dead and then you reanimate?
I think actually...
Because this is different types of zombies we're talking about now.
Right.
Yeah. No, actually, I think we're talking about the same thing, and we kind of addressed it earlier. I think what happens is the initial spread of the virus has to be done through essentially saliva, the virus on, you know... Somehow, the virus has to get out.
Right.
So, patient zero is infected...
Yeah.
He's infected for, we've decided, 20 days. And let's say for the first 3 or 4 days, he's normal. But then he starts feeling a cold. But to him, it just feels like a cold. So he's still trying to go to work. Mm-hmm. He's still interacting with people. But he's spreading it. When he coughs or sneezes, saliva will... contact surfaces, right. People will touch those surfaces, same with him sneezing. The thing is, though, it has to be fluid transfer.
And I think at that rate, too, also, I would even throw the caveat that in that 20-day period from initial infection, that you would be fine for longer than the first 5, maybe 7 days, and then for another 6 days or so, you feel like cold symptoms, and by the last few days, you feel like you're going to die. And you do, because it just ravages you that bad. And by that time, even the most stubborn of us would have gone to a hospital to try to, you know, figure something out by the end of that cold period, you know, where you're feeling like fucking dog shit.
But again,
and that's another higher contagion.
Because the symptoms manifest and look like a flu, doctors aren't going to really, they're going to say, you've got the flu. Yeah. Go home, drink lots of fluids, that sort of thing.
But you've already infected your doctor, which is going to infect every patient that they see all day.
Exactly. But.
Just saying, hospitals are gross.
So.
Yeah.
But that's the initial wave of infection. After someone turns and they become what we will call a zombie and they start biting, the infection rate is faster because.
The direct
way that the virus attacks. So it goes straight into your stream.
Direct contact.
Yeah, if they're biting you, it's, like we said earlier,
right.
It's getting straight into your blood. Mm-hmm. So it's incubating faster.
So, all right, under those pretenses, how much faster does the virus act upon you after an initial bite? And I'm not talking about a jugular vein getting squirting out like you're going
to
die in a matter of seconds.
To...
But if they bite you on...
Saliva has to get into blood.
Right, but let's say you get bit on the outside of your hand. It's not a fatal wound by any stretch of the matter. But how long are we saying after the bite does it incubate and kill you?
Well, given that we said that the virus thrives...
I would say until the length of time it takes the blood to pump through your system. So how long does it take for your heart to pump blood throughout your entire body?
As far as I understand, one blood cell from top to bottom of your body is something like 15-20 minutes, give or take. depending on how much of a fucking panic you're in. So adrenaline kicked in. I think actually it would be probably closer to like, closer to like 4 or 5 minutes, maybe.
Okay, so let's say that one cell of this virus gets into your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
It has to multiply. So it's going through your system at a rate of, let's just say, 15 minutes for the sake of argument.
Okay.
And it's multiplying with every circulation.
Okay.
But it has to get to a certain percentage. Before you'll die. But you go through the same symptoms that someone who was in the initial infection wave, but faster. So let's say that instead of 5 days before you start feeling the cold symptoms, it is literally 3 hours.
Instantaneous, almost. And that way, what are we giving it? About 2 or 3 days after initial bite?
It's got to be faster than that.
Yeah.
If it's a straight bite and you're turning, I would say maybe 8 hours.
Okay. At that rate, your epidemic level is going to go through the roof because the infection has already traveled.
Yeah, it depends on the bite and where it is.
Right. And on top of that, just ingesting it through your mouth or through your eyes or whatever. At that rate, yeah, you'd have a higher epidemic level because, again, it would be really hard to maintain who patient zero was because now you've got damn near half of the city that technically has had it for the last 20 days and has...
And they've spread...
exponentially outward. So, I mean, yeah, once the initial... patient zero turned, it would be a couple of days before, you know, groups of people would start turning as well.
So you would see wave one of the infection from patient zero until patient zero is essentially turns. And I would say within hours of him turning, you're going to have others because he's going to have run into people and they're going to, you know, started getting sick.
Right.
So I would say wave one, within 30 days, you've got a couple hundred thousand initial zombies. And from there, with the virus spreading faster and incubating faster, you could have millions within 6 weeks.
Give or take.
You're talking epidemic level within 6 weeks.
Yeah, and at that rate, you might be looking at a global-scale style apocalypse, but at the same time, how fast is the body able to maintain before it decays to useless at that point?
Well, we said initially, like, 4 weeks.
Okay.
Four weeks before decay really starts taking hold.
Yeah.
So...
I have a lingering suspicion
that's just
that
general. There's also give and take to look at.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. There's so many factors in this. Oh, but yeah. just the initial from the moment you are declared dead till you are reanimated, we said 15
mm-hmm.
minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So from that 15 minutes to roughly 4 weeks before you start seeing real decay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the body's going to slow down anyway because it starts decaying pretty much immediately.
Right.
But let's say the zombies start slowing down within a week.
Okay.
Now, let's say you take a very healthy, physically fit male in their early 20s. Marathon runner, that sort of thing. So their agility, stamina, that sort of thing holds. But if you were to graph it, declines fairly steadily over the next 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But then at that 4 week mark, when decay really takes hold, it starts to drop off exponentially.
Well, yeah, and I mean, at that rate, we're also looking at the normal physiology.
And please keep in mind that none of us are doctors, and this is all guesswork here.
Speculation at best. one of the things I was thinking about, though, as well, that needs to be taken into consideration, I mean... your body's organs as well as your muscle groups and things like that will start atrophying and shutting down without any form of sustenance after, well, I think you can go 3 days without water and you can go up to 5 days without food.
Okay, but let's...
But at that rate, your body goes on such a heavy decline that your muscles will just fall out from
it. But we have to assume that the body, the zombie body, is gaining some sort of sustenance from the flesh it's eating. The virus is forcing the body to perform basic functions.
Right.
Such as the heart's got to keep pumping to keep some sort of fluid going.
Right.
The brain is obviously active, but there's no memories or anything. It's just muscles that it's working.
Right. It's just
which would essentially be
synapses.
Your very basic system. You are dead.
Right. By all accounts.
But the body is still functioning on a very, very basic level.
So, yeah, like the last running lights are on, but nobody's home.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Again.
So the body is still feeding off the nutrients, but it isn't functioning at its peak. Because it's kind of at war with itself. It's decaying while it's still trying to survive. But the decay is essentially stronger than what the virus can provide.
Right. And at that rate, it's a matter of time before it just gives up. And, yeah, because, I mean, it's weird what happens to the body when it doesn't get what it needs.
Like so the sleep. Virus will reanimate the brain with essentially one goal, and that's to feed itself.
Well, again, it works like rabies in the respects, or rabies and rat poison. Mm-hmm. Rat poison will make the animal excruciatingly thirsty. And so they will seek out water sources, and they'll overdrink, and their bladder will explode. They will usually end up drowning, things like that. That's kind of how rat poison works. So in the respects, if we're thinking these zombies are very similarly wired, they'll have that base instinct of find sustenance at all costs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, again, under that pretense, if you can get yourself away from civilization for, I would say, a year. If you can find a place to hide away from other people for a year, I would imagine the death toll would have slowed to a crawl by the time you decided to resurface. So if you can keep yourself alive out in the middle of the fuck nowhere all by your lonesome, the likelihood is you would probably survive.
And away from anyone who has a cold or flu-like symptoms.
Exactly. That's what I mean. You're better off by yourself.
Yeah.
Yep. You're better off for multiple reasons. But at the same time, yeah, if you can survive on your own for a year, I'd imagine by the time you decided to start seeing what happened, most of the devastation would have already played itself out. And I think at that point, you'd either have people trying to pick up the pieces or just leaving wastes. And you would eventually end up with just a barren wasteland of infection.
So using a very basic knowledge of anatomy and science, the three of us have figured the zombie apocalypse would last about a year.
Give or take.
From patient zero till it's all over and you can start coming out of hiding.
Yeah, if you're lucky enough to have not contracted it by one of the many, many people who were spreading it around while it was still in its dormant state, I'd imagine after a year you'd have weeded out who was infected and doomed versus who wasn't and managed to get the hell away from everybody else and basically let the undead rule the metropolises of the world.
So there you go. A year is all you need. And Samantha said goodbye without saying goodbye.
Bye-bye, Samantha.
And that's it for us. We're going to call it. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to have to explore this more.
Hi.
This was fun. It really was.
I always have a good time talking this kind of shit, because I've always had a love for biology and viruses and shit like that.
Well, it's interesting to look at it from as realistic a point of view as we can, because in any zombie movie, it's never explained how it happens. It's right. Always a virus, and it always spreads, but we actually gave it connotation here, like how it could conceivably spread and...
Again, there's a lot of suspending disbelief in the respects, but at the same time, at least we're trying to approach it from a more realistic standpoint than, you know, well, it's supernatural and the dead are just rising. Fuck you. There are dinosaurs in this world.
Okay, that's it for us. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week.
See bye. You. Sam says bye, too.
Thank you for listening to Not Another Podcast. There are so many places for you to find us outside of www.notanotherpodcast.com. For instance, you can find us on Facebook at Not Another Podcast. You can also find us on Tumblr at www.notanotherpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find me, Samantha Stark, on Twitter at SamanthaStark3. And you can find James on Twitter as well under James Spooky, spelled with an I-E, not A-Y. And you wanted it, you asked for it, you got it. You can also find us now on iTunes under, you guessed it, Not Another Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out, Not Another Podcasters.